Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast. You guys. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, November 19th, 2017. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on iTunes and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. You can like the show on Facebook, you can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival, and you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now on Twitter at Chris Lamberth. This is episode 250. Wow, 250 of these things. I got a super special guest, super special return guest, Don Will, MC, DJ from Tanya Morgan. Super excited to share that conversation with you. He makes his triumphant return on this episode. I'm going to give it to you in a little bit. Right now, I'm on location. I'm chilling in the parking lot at the Palisades Mall in West Nyack, New York, sitting outside of the Target, watching people come in, come and go. It's nighttime. It's around 6 o'clock. And why do you ask? Am I here? Am I here to get some toiletries? No, I'm closing out the week. I'm closing out the weekend featuring for Tom Cotter at Levity Live, my home club, just kind of got it. Was not scheduled. I did not know that I was going to be here, but Friday they hit me up and asked me to come, and I was like, yes, I would love to come and get some stage time and some money to talk to people and make them laugh. So I'm all for that. So whenever I get the chance to do that, I'm ready, willing, and able. Sunday, I had a really cool day. I woke up this morning, had made myself some breakfast, and then I went to my first bris. And it's a bris is a baby boy in the Jewish religion, a baby boy's circumcision after the 8th day of his birth. And it's you get circumcised, and it's a naming ceremony. It was my first one. Congratulations to Dan Enfield and his lovely wife, Louise. They had a beautiful baby boy. And Dan Enfield's a comedian in the New York City area. And it was really cool. I had never been, and did the baby registry thing, got the baby a gift. I did not want to get a toy that made noise, because I figured the baby would be making enough noise on his own. So I just got like a little plush thing and something else, like a little thing. Once he gets like active, he can, you know, he's only 8 days old, so it's not much the kid's going to be doing but sleeping and pooping. But it was a really sweet moment that almost got me. Like, they had chopped they did the thing and the baby was crying, but there's a moment where Dan was like, he's going to be okay. I was like, it's just like it was like Dan had this fatherly moment, and it was really sweet. Dan's a sweet guy. That was a beautiful thing. It was a bunch of comics that came to the ceremony. And so we had a comics table at the little reception. We were talking, shooting the shit. And it was good to catch up with, always good to catch up with comics, and always good to be at a ceremony to celebrate life as opposed to something sad, you know. So it's always a good time to support one of your comrades when he's going through a life change. So that was fun. This past week was pretty good. TPS Reports by Day did a show at Moe's Lounge in Fort Greene, New York on Wednesday. That was fun. It was, that's a black room. And I always love performing in black rooms to just get a good gauge. You hear me talk about it all the time. I think when Shalewa Sharp was on, we touched on that. And it was at one point, it's a lot of like cool people. There are a lot of cool hip people in Brooklyn and really cool black people about town. And I was like, okay, got to make these people laugh. Kind of felt like I was in high school. And I get on stage. First of all, the host, Dave Lester, thought I was somebody else. And so I went on stage and I did my thing. I did like maybe 10 or 12 minutes. And I had to shorten some of the jokes just to pop them. And they were laughing. But some people, you could tell there were some people there that were trying not to laugh. But I made them laugh anyway. And I got out unscathed. But it was a good time. So shout out to Dave Lester. And unshout out to Don Will, because Don Will and I recorded this episode on Wednesday. And I was like, yo, let's get something to eat. Let's, get some food or whatever. And I was like, oh, I kind of want some Mexican. I want a burrito. So we went to this Mexican spot and it was not good. I said, Don, you know this place. Why would you do this to me? I just hate when you get food and it's just mediocre. It was just the blandest fucking burrito I ever had. Chipotle tastes better. So it's Don Will's fault. It's not mine. And then we did what else? I got to get some culture. So I did. I went to a Bris today. I went to see this play at the Lincoln Center, which I was really excited about because I'd never been to the Lincoln Center before. I went to see this show called After the Blast, which is was directed by Lila Neugebauer and written by Zoe Kazan. Now, you might know Zoe Kazan from more recently The Big Sick. She's done a movie called Monster. She wrote this movie called Ruby Sparks, which was really good a few years back. And just a really talented actress and writer. And she wrote this play that was basically this post-apocalyptic play about this couple that's in this underground encampment where the survivors of a blast, which is hence the name After the Blast, they're trying to rebuild society. And there's this couple played by William Jackson Harper and from The Good Place, the black guy from The Good Place, and Kristen Milioti, who's been in a lot of stuff. The most, I guess the standout thing that I can remember off the top of my head was she was in season 2 of Fargo, and she played the mom that was that had cancer and that was terminally ill, and she was fantastic. And so it's this couple that's and it actually closes tonight. This couple trying to have a kid, and it's just really fucking good. And hopefully it'll be like a play that's done around the country once it gets. This was like the first. What do they call it? I'm so out of the game, out of the theater game. World premiere of the show. And the Lincoln Center, they're doing this thing now where, I guess like a few years ago, my friend was telling me that in this space called the LCT3, which is a wing of the Lincoln Center where they do up-and-coming plays by young playwrights. And it's really cool. So I had a great time seeing that show. And theater is always inspiring to me. One of my favorite things to do outside of going to the movies is just live performance, especially music and theater. So it's always good to do stuff like that. And I don't know, that's basically it. I gotta give you a music recommendation. On my way up here, I was listening to Odyssey's live album called Beneath the Surface, and it's really dope. Odyssey's one of my favorite MCs of all time, and you've heard me nerd out about him before. And it's his live album. My favorite, the Iceberg, his album that was released earlier this year, like February, my favorite album of the year. Like, I can't stop playing it. I can't stop, like, just, like, listening to certain songs and vibing out to them. And he put out this live project that's really good. So I highly recommend that if you're a hip-hop fan. And I think that's it. I think we should just... There's some bonus content that's going to come up on this week on the Patreon page. Don Will and I did a recap of Stranger Things. So we had some fun shooting the shit, talking about the show, and basically talking about... We basically used the show as a launch pad to talk about our childhood and stuff, and we had a great time. So if you're a fan of Don Will, you're going to want to hear him on the Patreon behind the paywall. And we was lunching on that joint, young. Some more indie movie corners coming up. I'm in talks with some people. I'm going to make some things happen and give you some good stuff over there on the Patreon page. So Don Will, man, this is his third appearance. Like I said, we had a great time. We just shot the shit and vibed out, and it's always a great time talking to him, man. So without further ado, here is my conversation with the great Don Will. I was up at like 3:30
this morning.
Well, nigga, for what?
And what time did you go to sleep?
I don't know. I went to the gym. I got home. I ate dinner. I was watching. What the fuck was I watching? I was watching TV, and I went to sleep. Fell asleep on my couch. Woke up. It was like 1:00, and then I went back to sleep. And then woke up. It's just like a weird. It's just weird. Dude.
Did you have to be up, or you just woke up and were like, "Fuck it, I'm up."
I get up normally at before 4:50. My alarm clock is set at 4 to 4:50 a.m.
Why?
I got to go to work.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, TPS reports.
True. All right. Word. Well, yeah. Damn. That's kind of rough, man.
Yeah. That's my Clark Kent shit.
I mean, do you take naps at work?
No, I can't take naps.
I wonder
at work.
Because you know, like comedy's like you be out late. You know what I'm saying?
I know it's funny. Like there's a I shouldn't be saying. I have a coworker that has a. She works at a grocery store part time.
You could bleep all those words out.
And she was like complaining about her job, her second job, and it's like I don't know. You should be talking about your second job at your first job.
Yeah, you shouldn't do that.
And I was like, I don't know if you should be doing that. And it's like I was like, yo, you work in retail. Retail is gonna be tough. Like, so that's, I mean, it's just, it is what it is. I know that life, and yeah. I know it's not a great one, but it's like, do you know, I'm thinking to myself, do you know how many times I got home at 3:00 and just fucking came right to work?
Yeah, man, that's why when you said 4:00, I'm like, holy shit. That's a grind, man, but you know what I'm saying? I salute the grind.
It is, man. You know what it's like. It's just.
I know what time it is, man.
It just seems like it's, because you have to have that. You have to I always say on the show, like, you have to have something that's going to feed you spiritually. Like, so, it just bleeds into the rest of your life.
Yeah, and I mean, like, you know, you'll make time for what's important.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And like, as much as people besmirch jobs and providing for yourself, it's important. So you have to make time for it. You know?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You like how I work besmirch into the conversation?
Dude, you're a wordsmith. Hey, I wouldn't expect anything less from you.
I'm usually an idiot, but I get real lucid when the mics come on sometimes.
Hey man, hey, I know your raps well, dude. So I hey man, it's not.
If you would have talked to me 10 minutes ago, I'd have been like, "What's that? What's my name? My name is what is it?"
Yeah. Before we started, I was telling you about a show, like, and I was. It's just one of those like those moments where you have to level up. Where you like you feel like, oh, I really did handle my business there.
Yeah.
Do you ever have shows where you think like you're prepared and you know you got the goods, but just the environment around it is like this could go
where it tests more than just your ability. It tests like your like it tests like the soul of who you are as an artist. You know
yes.
what I'm saying? Like
yeah.
on some shit where like you're Yeah, I've been in those situations where, you know, like it's not about can you do the job or will the people enjoy it. It's can you get them to understand that there's something happening.
Right.
Like, it's almost like, for me, I have to tap into, like, that old school teacher experience in a way, like to like get their attention, get them to focus, and then capture their attention, and then move in a way and such that like they're like, okay, I'm enjoying this. Like it's
you
it's
have
like,
to become Joe Clark.
Yeah, it's like sleight of hand in a way. You know what I'm saying? I can't remember the last time it happened because I've mainly been DJing a lot. So like you play music and people either listen or don't.
What's that been like? Are you tired of comedy now?
Actually, no.
Okay.
I'm not. But the fun thing for me with DJing is seeing the same sets over and over and over.
Do people do the same set over and over on Night Train? Did they?
Well, not even not, because sometimes I'll go, I'm like, I'll do Sashir's Party Time, and then I'll do Two Dope Queens, and then I'll do Night Train. And then,
yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, comedians kind of work the circuit, so.
Sure, sure.
But seeing the same sets, and then, like, I'm still fascinated by, like, just the magic of comedy. You know, I'm still fascinated by, like, how you can tell the same joke but in a different way and get a bigger laugh.
Right.
Or like you could tell the same joke and it might not work. I'm still fascinated with that because it still feels the same as like, you know, I related to how like if I play one record in a room, I might not have set the record up right. So the crowd didn't really feel it. But if I play it in a different room, I'm still fascinated by the fact that like how things play to different audiences. So,
yeah,
I'm not tired of comedy. I'm actually like I'm excited still.
Well, that's good. I mean, that's good because I was wondering about that because Night Train just closed after 5 years. Now, how long have you been on that show?
Three.
Okay.
Yeah, I wasn't there for the first year and a half, 2 years. And then I think either Wyatt, it was Wyatt. It definitely wasn't Mary. I'm pretty sure it was Wyatt. Wyatt was like, you want to come DJ? And I was like, sure.
Yeah. Because that, to me, like, that's one of those shows maybe you get to do as a – as a comic who's not famous, that's me. That's a show that I would get to do once or twice a year.
Yeah.
So that was always like, that's one of those shows where you, for me, that I have to show out.
It's, man, and we got a new show, Butterboy. Marianne Ways is producing that, and it's a partner, Nancherla, Joe Firestone, and Maeve Higgins.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you know, three of my personal favorite, like, not even comedians, but just people. Like, they're wonderful people. Like, they're fun people. And it's gonna be fun to like develop a dynamic and like some sort of like banter on stage and like some sort of rapport, like a deeper rapport. But not like in terms of what Night Train was, man. That shit, it meant a lot. You know what I'm saying? Like it was like my entrance into.
Sure. Yeah.
I'm still like figuring out what I'm even doing here. Like when I say what I'm doing here, I mean like in the comedy space. You know.
Well, I think you just kind of get in where you fit in. I think you're. I don't know. It's well, because when I, like a nerd like me, is like, that's fucking Don Will. I think I knew who you were.
Yeah. So there are people who don't. But,
yeah.
But like, so it's one of those like evolving role type of things where now I'm super comfortable addressing a room of people.
Yeah.
Like, and I might not, like, I clearly don't have a joke. I don't have like a set. I'll just be talking and riffing and. If they don't laugh, they don't laugh. If they do laugh, they do. But, you know, like...
hey, guys, I'm the DJ, so fuck you guys.
Right. But, you know, like, that's that level of public speaking, like, unrehearsed, just on the fly at any given moment, being, like, needing to get on the mic. And, like, I could be literally at a show texting under the thing, like, telling Marianne, like figuring out the set list with Marianne, and, like, I don't know, whoever's on stage will just say my name or be like, so Don, what are you? And I look up like, oh shit, I'm on stage. And I have to like.
Yeah, you have to be on.
Yeah, like, and it's one of those things where it definitely took some time to figure out how to like just be on in the moment.
It's almost like you're like the indie comedy, like the independent comedy scene version of The Roots.
Let's go.
Where it's like.
Let's go.
Where it's like. I've maybe been following you
Black
since...
Black Love, Quest Thought.
Since, like, maybe, like, 06, 07. When did,
Like, 06, 07, yeah, that's right.
That's when I caught on to you guys, so maybe, like, shit, Foreign Exchange, the first record, what the fuck is the name of the first record?
Connected.
So when Connected, I was like, oh, okay, Von P. Oh, Von P's pretty cool. Then he's in... Tanya Morgan. So that's how, like, 05, 06 is when I discovered you guys. And so when I did that first show that you were on, I guess in that first year you were on,
yeah,
I was like, what the fuck? I was like, do they realize who's over there on the ones and twos?
That's I think the comedy crowd is figuring it out slowly, but it's one of those things where, you know, like, you just gotta. I'm trying not to live a double life, so I have to, like, do multiple things at once and make it, like, pull it all together to make it make sense. So,
but that seems like that's what America is now. I mean, that seems to be what the landscape is. I don't think you can really. I think you can make a lot of money doing stand-up unless you're at the upper echelon.
Yeah.
So it's like, and even in the hip-hop game where it's like, you have to be, they want to know more about you. Like, it's a lifestyle thing. It's not just like, I like Don Will's albums, but I want to know, like, who is this guy?
Right. The other thing is that, you know, like, you just have to do whatever the thing is that you do.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it doesn't make you a lot of money, like, you can't just be a writer because, like, you have to write if you're a writer. You have to, like, get stage time if you're a comedian. You have to record music to be a musician. You know what I'm saying? You mm-hmm. can't just be an ideological version of whatever it is you say you are. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because we live in a world where, you know, the tools are all right. The tools are all right there, and the resources are there. And unfortunately, people are like, they're more into the headline than the article. So mm-hmm. if I just say, like, yeah, I'm a mechanic, nobody's going to question me because I don't, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, until their car breaks down.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, like, this convoluted analogy is leading up to, like, you and that show. Like, it's that thing where, you know, you don't really get tested on something until you're in a situation where it requires you to reach outside of your skill set and kind of, like, bring more of yourself to a thing than you wanted to or than you planned on doing. Like, so it might be a rap show where, or it might be a DJ gig where suddenly I'm hosting the gig, or, like, suddenly I'm like fielding requests to make the room move in a certain direction, or, like, you know, it's a multitude of things can happen, but it's basically that scenario where, you know, like, not you're dealing with a heckler,
mm-hmm.
but you're dealing with a crowd that may or may not have bargained for your brand of comedy, you know
right,
what I'm saying?
Right.
And then those are honestly, like, those are the challenges where, when you do have a challenge, that's when you feel, like, more successful.
Yeah.
That's when you feel like you either crushed it or you got crushed.
It's all, that's definitely true, because it happened to me around this time last year, around the fall of last year, where, and I mentioned this a bunch of times on the show, but it was just, like, within the last year, where it's like comedy and any type of art form or any type of craft, it's like, you're learning it, and it's almost like a role-playing game where it's like an RPG, like Final Fantasy or Legend of Zelda, like, where there's a situation like, yeah, I'm learning my craft, I'm getting better, I'm evolving, but then there's a boss level where it's like where it's like, it's really going to test everything that you've learned and the skills you've acquired. And then once you get past that, you're like, okay, like, you leveled up.
Perfect example. After a while of Night Train, you know, like, just Marianne produces the event. Like, mm-hmm. We have a sound engineer dude there, Ben. And, like, there are these components that make the show run smoothly.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember there was one week where it was literally Marianne was out, Ben was out. We had, I forget who was running the show, but usually the event producer is always good. And even the sound engineer they bring in is always good. But it was that show where both of them hadn't done Night Train enough or before. Like, I think the sound engineer hadn't done it before at all. And the person who was standing in for Marianne was just kind of like, I don't remember who it was. And both people did their job well, but it felt like I was left in charge of things.
You were the boss.
You know what I'm saying? So, like in setting up the mics, it was just like I had to, like, plot the stage a little bit, or, like, even, like, give some direction on how to set up the mic, how to set up the sound for the show, and then, like, texting, because, you know, like, I'm on stage and the producer, the stand-in producer is
in the booth
handling comedians, doing all kinds of shit.
Yeah.
So I'm, like, texting her, like, hey, can you tell whoever's running sound to kill the spotlight or something, like, you know, like, just or just, like, giving sort of, like, subtle stage direction where I was like, I've been watching them run this show, watching Marianne run this show for so long that I kind of picked up cues.
Yeah.
And you carry that over to other venues and other shows where, like, you know, I might get asked to DJ for somebody's thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I have, like, these little, like, ingrained kind of nuggets of show, like, running a show wisdom where it's just, like, this needs to happen right here.
Right.
Or knowing what I need before I come to the venue versus, you know, when you show up green, you're just like, yeah, just put me on stage.
Right.
And you have no idea what's going on. You know what I'm saying?
It's so true. Like, I was listening to, I saw Lady Bird on Sunday. I don't know if you know that movie, Greta Gerwig movie. Anyway,
I was thinking about Lady Dynamite. That's not Lady Dynamite.
Oh, no, that's Bamford.
Yeah.
Have you started season two yet?
I watched the first episode.
How is it?
It's good. I was gonna say it's Maria. Like,
yeah.
But I can see how that would be taken as like
I fuck with Maria Bamford hard, and the show, like, it was almost like, not to speak in hyperbole, it was like, I kind of don't know if I've ever seen anything like that.
I haven't.
I've but seen versions of things, but
it's a super specific show.
Yeah.
Like, I've been around people and I've tried to show it to them and they just don't. Not even don't get it. They just don't. They have a visceral, I don't like this reaction.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's in response to, like, you kind of got to relate and understand to that level of, like, to some, like, mental disability to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't just go into it. Like, you can't feel fine and enjoy it. You know what I'm saying?
She was very instrumental in her stand-up was really instrumental for me, like, in my embryonic stages. Part of me still feels like I'm in my embryonic stages still, even though I'm
fetal, man.
Even though I'm fucking dope.
You're fetal,
but,
G.
But, you know, I'm still.
You coming to term, my nigga. You crowning right now.
That's hilarious.
Get the forceps.
Oh, shit. Oh, my God. Get the forceps. Wow. So I remember seeing her at the now defunct Comics Comedy Club. This had to be like. To be like 2010.
Comics with an X, right?
Yeah, yeah. I've it was like on 14th and 9th, Meatpacking. I remember seeing her live, and it was just this fearlessness that she had, like, where it was just like, I'm putting everything, like, I'm just like an open wound, or just like an open, just really open. And it was just something that just like, okay, that like kind of pushed me to go even further. Like, because yeah. It was like one of those people where, you know, obviously Pryor did that, and, you know, you have these people that bear their souls, but it was in a way that I hadn't seen before, and I really, like, appreciated her for that. I did a show with her 4 years ago in Philly where this was my first time. So I was opening for Chris Hardwick in Philly.
Okay.
And Bamford was on the show. She was doing the Sunday show, and it was just like a one-nighter, but she was in town. And she was doing guest spots through the shows. And the first night, I was like, "Fuck, I gotta follow Bamford. What the fuck?
How do you feel like you did?
I ripped that shit.
Yeah. I mean, it's usually your own shit getting in your way when you're like, I gotta follow. So I mean, granted, there are some things where you're like, I can't follow that.
Like, well, the host was like, "Ah, you gotta follow Bamford." I was like, "Well, that's why we play the game."
Yeah.
And Hardwick was like, "Yep, pretty much."
Yeah, like, you know, like I've been in situations and done shows where it's just like, do not want to follow this, and you just fucking get up and do it.
Give
you know
me one of them.
Oh, man. South by Southwest.
Okay.
It was a while ago. This was embryonic.
Yeah.
TDE, and I want to say it was J-Rock.
Oh, shit.
Schoolboy Q, and Kendrick was definitely there, but I don't think Kendrick was performing.
What year? Do you remember?
This was... I don't even remember. It was like...
Are we talking like 08?
Like 2010, I think.
But you guys were already established.
Yeah, but still, like, it was the change when, like...
Just their style, stylistically.
Not even stylistically. It was the change when, like, we had been around... It was when the internet started getting, like, becoming the place to go from...
Sure,
like, when the internet
gotcha.
Started getting more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And artists of our caliber and artists of like us who had been kicking it around... kind of started getting moved aside for younger people with a bigger online following.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so they were like Big Crit just came out. I remember I walked up to Crit. I was like, yo, man, I'm a big fan. I'm Don Will, Tanya Morgan. I thought he was going to be like, oh, yeah, no. He was like, cool. I was like, okay.
Oh,
so,
he like moves you out the way?
But it wasn't like a playing you thing. It was just kind of like, I don't know who you are. Cool.
Okay.
Like, thanks, man. Cool. That's what's up. And for me, it was like I used to do this thing where I would go around introducing myself to everybody. And it was kind of like a gauge to see. It was like a heat check in a way. Like,
to see if they knew who you were.
Yeah. And it used to like just. But I remember there was a specific year where that just kind of stopped being like. like when the internet like really took off and it stopped, like people just stopped knowing who everybody was. They just started like kind of having their little insulated base.
Ah, yeah.
And that was like that year. But so I remember we were performing. Well, TDE was on stage and then a fight broke out and they all got rushed out.
Oh, shit.
No, my bad. That's wrong because that happened. That happened after our set. Never mind. That's not a good example. It's not a good example.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of a time when it happened recently. I can't think of a time recently. But I mean, I've done a lot of shows, so I'm sure it's happened.
Yeah, where it was just like, I don't know about this. I mean, like, well, I know. Oh,
if you want to hear about the TDE fight, there's a link to it online. I'll give you a link.
Okay.
It's documented.
All right.
So, yeah. I don't know why I had to say that.
To remember to do that.
Yeah. Take my coat off.
Yeah, sure, man. I remember following her. That was probably the first big test that I would say. But that was like, I was 4 years in at the, I would say 3 or 4 years in. But I just remember like really being a fan of hers. And then I just tweeted like, oh, I had a great time with Hardwick and Bamford. And she wrote back and she's like, oh, you were so great. My boyfriend and I laughed so much. And I screen capped it.
Yeah.
put it on my website.
Screen cap frame, something printed out.
I was like, yeah, nigga. So like that was really cool.
Well, I mean, I guess more so than following something, like opening
on somebody, being on a track, like hearing somebody's verse and like, yo, I gotta really.
Nobody's ever got the best of me on a song.
Okay.
That's my rapper confidence, nigga.
Yeah, it should be.
Bars. But I hit my
don't
head.
Don't hurt see, yourself.
Hit my head talking about this shit.
Get,
but
get CTE.
That's the name of my new crew, CTE. You know what I'm saying? But we did a show in Toronto and the bill was just The Roots and Us.
Damn.
And it was, Toronto is infamous for not liking you. Like,
really?
They do not like.
I thought they were
call
nice.
It the, they call it the ice grill capital.
Wow.
If you go to Toronto and you don't bring it, the motherfuckers will boo you. You'll get pushed off stage.
Okay.
And I remember it was just us and The Roots. And like, we got put on the bill. We were like gracious for it. We got on stage. I was nervous as fuck. Because again, like it's, The Roots are a full band. Mm-hmm. It was us and a DJ. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it was that, like, I want to say at least five. Like, it was like a big-ass venue, 5,000 people or some shit. So we get up there, two songs in. They're just losing their shit. And, like, by the time we got halfway through the set.
What record were you touring?
This was Brooklyn Addy.
Okay.
Yeah, by the
first,
time.
That's the first, like proper project, right? Is that the first one?
Moonlighting was the first album, but Brooklyn Addy was the one.
That's the one that got like pushed.
And I just remember like after that set, you know, we killed it. Like I'm not no hyperbole, we killed it. Mm-hmm. Like to the point where it was just like undeniable. The crowd was loving it. Like when Roots and them came out, like thought gave us a shout out and shit. And then after the show, like, you know, they're The Roots. They didn't have merch. They just, like, went
away. We're The Roots, motherfucker.
Away.
Yeah.
And we had a table with, like, merch. We sold everything. Mainly because people were like, yo, do The Roots have merch? We were like, nah, we got merch, though. So they were just buying shit. And, like, the thing that was cool was that people weren't, it wasn't like a pity buy. Like, oh, man, I guess I'll just buy this instead. Like, yo, y'all were crazy. Y'all were dope. Like, we literally, like, we made an impact that night. And it felt like we conquered some shit, you know what I'm saying? But it definitely, most of the times in rap, it would be the bigger deal than following something would be opening up for some shit. Because, you know,
yeah.
People didn't, like, there was like the time we opened for Drake and the crowd booed us.
Wow, really?
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, we got booed. But
was that what album was that?
That was, that was after Brooklyn, like Brooklyn Addy era. It was after Brooklyn. Like Von actually mentions it on the first song on the new album. Once got booed out while opening for Drake. Promoter still opened up to save thanks. Like it happens. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But that was, we were at VCU.
I bombed in front of Bruce.
Really?
Yeah.
What did he say?
Last year. He didn't say, it was just like, they just didn't like me.
How bad of a bomb was it? It was just like silence?
It was, people were laughing at me bombing.
Oh,
this was last year. This was like last year. And they were like, oh, we didn't. And then Bruce was on stage. Like, we didn't like that guy. He had on New Balance sneakers. So
How far into the set did you realize you were bombing? Or, like, do you know what the turning point in the set was that made it?
They just didn't. I don't even remember. I was just emceeing, and I did, like, 10 or 15 up front. And they were just like, and then so the next night, I wore some Cortezes. And they were like, his hand.
The shoes did the shoes help?
Yeah, they helped. I just had a redemption.
Niggas are so fickle,
I had a redemption set. It was like, and I had like, I just went out and said, well, I'm going to just go harder and just go like with some newer stuff that I was working on in a hosting set. And ended up doing fine. But his handlers were like, you get paid on Sunday.
Where were you opening for Bruce at?
Levity Live, West Nyack, New York.
It was black crowd, right?
Yeah, it was black.
Yeah, you gotta wear some shoes for them niggas, man. Niggas gonna, they looking at your feet.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, New Balance is a dope. I fuck with New Balance.
I like them. I mean, maybe that's, I guess it's a DC thing. And yeah, they're fucking comfortable, man.
That's the thing, though. Like, you know, it is a DC. It's very much a DC thing. But, it, like, you know, niggas, we like flashy shit, man.
Now,
want to see some Jordans?
I'll tell you this, dude. I'll tell you this. So I bought some SBs, like, earlier this year. Some Nike SBs. And they look great. And I noticed I was working Caroline's 2 weeks ago, like, 2 Fridays ago. And I park like maybe a 10 or 15 minute walk. Yeah. I'm looking good in my SBs. And I'm like, these are good shoes, but they're not as comfortable, man.
The new ones?
Yeah. They're not as comfortable as New Balance.
Like Dunks?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I haven't worn a pair of Dunks in a minute. I have a couple pair. I haven't worn them in a while. But I have a really specific feet things now.
Like, yeah, when you get like, older, man, you can't just,
man, I have a lot of pairs of shoes and I try to switch it up. There are some pair like that they just hurt.
Yeah,
like, and it I don't know if it's the support, I don't know if my feet are just kind of like they've kind of like settled into what they're gonna be.
Yeah,
and my bones don't like different shoes. But I got a pair of Air Max ones that I love, and every time I wear them I wake up with a limp.
Like, you gotta put some, like, the homie Damian Lemon. I was working with him at Caroline's, and he was talking about getting older, and he was saying, like, yeah, he puts like orthotics in his like some Dr. Scholl's and shit in his Jordans.
That shit feels so old. Like, I guess we have different issues than our parents, though. You know what I'm saying? My dad wasn't putting orthotics in his Jordans.
Dude, like,
but
man,
I'm at the age where I need to put orthotics in my Jordans.
Last year, I bought some New Balance, the 991s. And I had,
you're a New Balance dude.
I like them.
I don't hate them. Again, like, I have some 998s, I think.
Now, don't get me wrong. Like, these, I follow a lot of sneaker accounts. I would say when I come into money.
When?
I would pay my bills and shit, help my parents. I would just like, I would get a lot of these Nikes. Now, they don't always have to be like the sexy Jordans that people pay $500 for. There's some that are just like nice, clean,
yeah,
not like super extravagant. I would buy different types of sneakers.
I don't like flashy shit. But yeah. I do notice flashy shit.
Yeah.
Like, I like to see other people wearing it. You know,
I did get complimented on my SBs, though, by some cool black dudes. So I was just like, you know, like, I don't, you're cool because you're a rapper. But for me, like, I'm like a regular dude. So it's just like, I was like, okay, these cool comics, they like my shit. So I think I'm good.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to turn the car off so the battery won't fuck up.
Yeah, you don't want to have your battery go dead.
Now it looks like now the light won't fucking turn off, and it looks weird.
We look ridiculous, but it's cool. It's New York. Nobody cares.
That's true.
Nobody gives a fuck.
Yeah, but now it's fucking, I don't know why it's like that.
If you're wondering what's happening, Chris is starting the car, and now the lights are going off, and the lights have dimmed inside the car.
Yeah.
And now the car is off. We're inside of his car, and he cannot make... Every time he pulls the key out, the lights come back on.
There we go.
But leaving the key in might drain the batteries. Pull the key out. See, it's
this fucking.
This podcast is now a podcast about the lighting system inside of his car.
Yeah, this is a new. This is a newer car. This is about a. This car is like a year old.
It's a nice car. I remember you were having car problems.
Yeah, my Sonata got totaled last year.
I didn't want to tell the people. You know what I'm saying?
No, they know.
They know. Okay, cool.
They know. But I bought some 991s last year, and dude, they were fucking. Now they're off. They feel so good. They feel so good. And it's like you get all these. And I know how, like, I'm not saying how women feel. You know, like women wear heels and all that stuff. They be fucking hurting.
Well, you know, the strong black woman inside of me, she can wear any shoe she wants because pretty hurts. You know what I'm saying?
Isn't that a Beyonce song?
It is.
Okay.
Another strong black woman.
There we go. There we go. So, yeah, they didn't like that. But it happens, man. It happens.
Yeah, you know, but the Cortez smoothed it over the next night.
Yeah, and then they were actually some Cortezes that I bought from, I think I ordered them from DSW.
DSW on the low sometimes have some dope shit. You know who has dope shit?
Who?
TJ Maxx?
Oh, yeah.
Or Marshalls? What's the one in Atlantic Mall?
Well, Marshalls? They're all the same.
Okay, well, sometimes it's the one in Atlantic Mall. If you go in there, they'll literally have all the, like, everything aftermarket, meaning, like, stuff that's, like, slightly out of season. It'll be $40 for some brand new Adidas Boost or some shit.
People will be like, where'd you get those?
And even down to, like, sometimes they'll, like, release Jordan shit that is grails. Like, it's just,
wow.
They have these Royal Blue Air Jordan 1s that Fragment did. And it's like a Fragment is like a little design boutique.
Okay.
And the Royal Blue Fragment Jordan 1s are like some, you can get cake for those if you like trying to resell them. They just had them at Marshalls for $80.
And you copped them?
I didn't cop. I just saw it online. That's when I started going in Marshalls. Like, oh, okay. I think I should start going to Marshalls because people are copping deals in there.
Shit, I didn't know that. I just go like for bath, like towels and shit.
Stopping that sneaker aisle, man.
Yeah. Because DSW, I didn't realize that they had men's shoes like 10 years ago. I didn't know.
I went in there and got some like church boots.
Yeah,
church
they've
boots,
got
or, like dress up boots or whatever. Shit I don't wear.
Yeah.
Some Marc Jacobs or some weird shit.
They got good shit there, man. I didn't know that because like 10 years ago when I first moved here, I was like, okay, I'll go to DSW. And I went. I was just like, man, like they got some really good shit. And I think I remember one time getting some Nikes that are like my gym shoes now. But people used to say, where'd you get these? I was like, DSW.
I want a pair of Nike Monarchs. If you don't know it. So, you know the.
I'll look it up.
The old man shoes. Like, they're white and navy blue. They're a white leather sneaker with like navy blue trim. And anytime you see. If you see a pair, it's either like a homeless person or like a really old man. Like, they are the official shoe of the washed community. And I just want to be fully washed. Like, they look comfortable. I heard they're very comfortable. They're Nike's top-selling shoe.
What were people were standing outside. I went to Chick-fil-A Saturday morning.
Bam. You see it. It's
okay.
On your phone.
Oh, yeah. I know these. Just
use that as, like, the image for this podcast.
Not a picture of you, but the Nike Monarch.
That Nike Monarch. I want that shit.
Oh, shit.
They're not even hard to find. I think I'm going to get a pair for Christmas.
You can get them at Dick's for $49.98. That's right.
Hey. They're Nike's most comfortable top-selling shoe.
That's fucking hilarious.
They go well with khakis if I want to show up to Charlottesville, the next Charlottesville. You know what I'm saying? I could pair some khakis with my Monarch, get a navy blue tiki torch to match. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Go ride on some racism. Do it.
Yeah, man. That's a hobby that I would definitely partake in.
Going to Charlottesville?
No, just to getting sneakers. No, Charlottesville.
I have a lot of sneakers in the crib. I'm trying to donate them. And like the sad part is that's sad. I found a place online that I would love to like give my sneakers to. It's this dude that he gets sneakers and refurbishes them and donates them to like distributes them to the homeless.
Okay.
But he's never online. So, like, his Twitter says, the last tweet he made was, like, a month ago. And it says something like, if you're good at Twitter, contact me so that you can run my Twitter. And the Instagram is him handing out shit. But again, like I DM'd him on Instagram, no response. Mm-hmm. DM'd him on Twitter, no response.
No phone number or nothing?
I mean, I'm working my way up to just calling a nigga. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I emailed him today, but I feel like I'm, like, I feel weird, like some kind of stalker. Like, hey, man, I got some shoes. I want
to
give you some
shoes.
Well,
you're trying to help him out.
Yeah, because I literally have, like, 20 pair I want to give him. Like, I'm trying to get rid of a bunch of shit. I'm moving on from this realm. You know what I'm saying? I'm about to level up and become the bigger boss.
I feel you.
So I got to make room in my life for more shoes.
For more shit. You're getting rid of some to make. I feel you.
Nah, my apartment's too little. I can't keep housing this shit.
Something came out Saturday morning. I saw people lined outside of it's like in Teterboro, New Jersey. It's like a shopping complex.
I don't know.
That's where all the rappers, they're like, I guess Jay-Z and Amy Schumer would probably have their private planes or.
Teterboro, that's where the Clearport is. They don't have the airport. They call it the Clearport.
Yeah, so that's near me, and they opened up a Chick-fil-A over there. And so sometimes I'll go get some chicken biscuits.
Mm, Chick-fil-A.
And I saw people, like, lined up. I was like, I wonder what sneaker. There was some shoe with the pigeon on it, some Nike.
Jeff Staple, the pigeon dunks, yeah.
Maybe that's what they were.
Yeah, it probably was.
Okay. Yeah, so... Oh, I wanted to ask you, because you kind of, last year was kind of a, I don't know if it was last year, you did the show last year, right? And you were working on that EP?
Yeah, I put out an EP last year.
Talk about it, because it was really good. I really liked it, because you were saying like you were kind of pouring over it a lot.
Yeah, it was a self-produced EP that I produced it, mixed it, mastered it. I did everything by myself, sonically. Then I got visual aid from my homeboy, Filthy, down in Atlanta, Soap Goods Creative. And it was more or less just like a...
Stop wasting time?
Stop waiting.
Stop waiting.
Yeah, it was just like, you know, like, just a little song set, just to shake the rust off, you know what I'm saying? Like, and more so see if I could do a project that was totally self-contained and see what I sounded like.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been working on a follow-up to it, but I've just been working really slow on it.
Yeah.
Because why the fuck not? It's not like... but it's coming. I'm definitely going to finish it. But, I mean, since then, I think the more important project was You Get What You Pay For.
Right.
Which...
It's really good. No, I was going to... I wanted to segue into that, but...
I won't say the more important project.
But I wanted to highlight the fact that, because it was a good project...
I appreciate that, my brother.
And I felt like you... You kind of downplayed it a little bit.
I did downplay it because that's what I do. I downplay everything that I do. And that's one of my great flaws as a creative, because who wants to be... It's not like awesome when somebody's like, yo, man, I just did an album. It's all right. You can check it if you want to. It's not really good. Like, that's not how you sell products. But, you know what I'm saying? That's just me. But, so Tanya Morgan put out an album, You Get What You Pay For. And it's the long-awaited fourth studio album. And it's great. Like, I'm not even...
It is, yeah.
It's really
I think that's
good.
The best thing you guys have done.
Thank you. I would agree with that, especially... So the thing, the album we put out before it, Rubber Souls, I think that next to... Rubber Souls is like the... It's the project that doesn't fit. I say that meaning like it's a really well done, great project. But
I
if
thought
you,
it was good. Why?
It's fantastic.
I need to revisit it.
No, it's fantastic. But it, like, if you listen to everything, like, You Get What You Pay For aligns more with the with our aesthetic. Like, we kind of stepped out of our lane to do Rubber Souls, and we kind of went in a more live music, full band direction, and it's good. You know what I'm saying? But our fan base, there was like slight backlash to it.
Why?
Like, I don't know. I think it was because of the sound, which. Again, like, I push for that sound. Like, that album was my... If you look at the credits, it says executive produced by me. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was, like, my baby. But when You Get What You Pay For came out, a lot of people were saying, thank you for going back to your sound. I think as artists, we didn't really realize what our sound was. And we step in and out of our sound a lot. And on Rubber Souls, we stepped out of our sound.
Okay.
We made a really great project by doing so, but it definitely was like a detour. And You Get What You Pay For is more in the vein of what a Brooklyn Addy, a Moonlighting, a Von P, a Don Will fan would be coming for. You know what,
Do you think? Because I really like the Abandoned Theme Park project, too.
Abandoned Theme Park was...
That was kind of like the little meal in between, like the in between the two.
That was a departure, too. That was a slight departure. Abandoned Theme Park happened because we were just... It was a text message conversation. Like, I remember one night we have a group chat, and one night we were just sitting around, and my homeboy Shay does beats, and Von was like, we should rap over this beat. Mm-hmm. And that happened three times in a row to the point where it would, like, we would be in chat and text message. Von would send a demo, and I would just send back a song like, here. Okay, that's a song. And it was like three or four days. Over the course of three or four days, we got like four songs done. And then when we got like the core, we sat down and really like tried to shape it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
A lot of our work, man, in general, is just organic. You know what I'm saying? It's we hang out with each other digitally or physically, and then we shape something after it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That project also was where we've been trying to really like do more visual stuff, and not necessarily just visual in terms of music videos, but like the content surrounding the album. So like the cover, the website, the merch, like making sure everything is like visually aesthetically aligned and matches the sound of the music, because you know, you don't really think about it, but things have to look and sound the same. Like they have to look like they sound, you know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? Or better yet, you can establish what the sound is by having a strong visual. So
how long did it take? Did the process take? Because this, when did that come out? Like August, July, August?
For Abandoned Theme Park?
No.
Or you get what you pay for it.
Because I remember, man, you sent it to me. I had it because I'm, you know, friends with you or whatever.
Holler!
I had it. But I remember, like, because I remember doing a show in Westchester, and before I went on, I was reading the, like, it was a really good piece that they, what's that interview?
The Bandcamp thing, I think.
Okay, yeah, the Bandcamp article, and you guys were talking about the project, and I feel like that was, like, July or August.
Yeah, it was supposed to come out in July 7th, I believe.
Okay.
But it didn't. I forget when it came out. But
you don't even know when your album came out, man.
I forget, man. I'd be forgetful. But I do know that there are songs on that album, and I don't think I've ever said this, so this is an exclusive. Oh,
exclusive.
Like the song that I like, Transplant Anthem, my solo record. That shit's from 2009.
Okay.
Like, so wow. There were songs on there that we've been working on, and we've been working over, and we've been like perfecting them, and like just really like, especially when we did Rubber Souls, we got the deal to do Rubber Souls, but that was supposed to be You Get What You Pay For. We met with a label about
You
Get What You Pay For.
This is a good record. I like that one, yeah.
Yeah, we met with this label about putting out You Get What You Pay For and ended up walking out with a deal for a new album that didn't exist. So You Get What You Pay For went to the back burner. And like it kept falling to the wayside. And mm-hmm. last year, this was just like, we have to put this album out. We got to do it. Otherwise, it won't come out.
Why'd you name it that?
It's just like, you know, like, I don't know why I just had a hell of a brain fart.
Dude, it happens to the best of us.
But, you know, as with anything, man, you get what you pay for. Like, it's kind of self-explanatory, yeah. But it was one of those things where we live in a streaming society where you don't own your music anymore. You lease it. You know what I'm saying? Like, and if you stop giving Apple your $10 a month, you don't have your music collection anymore. You know what I'm saying? Like, and it's...
How do you feel about that? Because I don't know that I want to be... I mean, I would gladly pay them $10 for the album, but then it's like... You're going to take it away, but then it doesn't exist. Like, it's like...
So the best way to support any artist independent that you see right now is buy the album and then just stream it. Like, yeah. just buy it just to buy it and then continue. Because you get, like, you get money from streaming and you get money from album sales, but the album sales is what moves it, like, up the chart or whatever. And, like, the streaming, you can also chart with streaming. But, you know, like, if you play the record on your phone... Like, or play it in your car. Like, you can't track that.
Yeah.
But if you're on your laptop anyway and you got a Spotify subscription, you might as well just play the album that you bought. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That way you kind of double down on like support, and you only get like you get fractal cents per stream. Like you don't even get a full cent. Like you get like whatever. So it's a weird time to be like a content creator that lives solely off of what you make, because you know it's shaky ground. But the title itself, "You Get What You Pay For," is kind of in reference to that. Like, you know, yeah. Like we live in a time where, you know, it's an investment. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like it's also a play on words, like pay attention. You know what I'm saying? Like if you pay attention to something, you get a deeper value from it. Like if you really invest in it with your spirit, sure, which sounds right. Hella existential and hippy dippy or whatever, but I don't give a fuck.
It happens on the show, man.
Yeah, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's one thing to just like give something a half glance, but if you really stare at a painting and try to figure out what each stroke meant and like whatever, you know what I'm saying? Like, you'll walk away with a deeper understanding of the painting, and you'll walk away with like a deeper appreciation for it, its value. So that was kind of what it was hearkening to, and that was where the brain fart came from, was trying to crystallize that thought again.
Yeah.
Because I haven't talked about this album in a while. I haven't talked to anybody in a while. I don't have a lot of friends.
I don't believe that. I don't believe that, man.
But yeah, like, it was a long time in the making, man, and I'm just really happy we finally got to put it out. Like, and the only thing standing in the way of us putting it out ultimately was us. But as you know, it's that bandwidth thing. Like, do I have the strength and time and energy to, like, put out a thing and promote it?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it's just like giving yourself a job. But even though making music is my job,
right,
it's still like giving yourself a job within your job. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. No, that makes sense. I want to do one. I thought I was going to do one
album
this year. Yeah, not a hip hop, but just a comedy.
You should do a R&B album, man.
No, that would take a longer time. If I got to the level where I would, you know, obviously, that is kind of a low-key dream, because I'm a failed R&B singer.
Just do one song.
A wannabe. No, I love music, dude. I would love to do that.
You can record it. You can record it like a podcast. Just put it out on a podcast. Do one song and put it on a podcast.
I'd have to go. I would. For me though, that would take some boot camp. I would have to get a vocal coach. Work with somebody.
You don't gotta do all that. Just sing.
But I wanna. I want to do it right.
I feel you.
Did a couple hooks for a guy like 8 or 9 years ago. I don't even know if he's rapping anymore.
Sometimes we stop rap. Sometimes we just stop, man.
I was on a mixtape. Good luck if you can find it. You'll never find it. I sung with Dwelle once.
Oh, shit, word?
Yeah, I sung with Dwelle. I don't know if I've told this story before. I probably did. 2005 at Double Door in Chicago, went on a date with this girl to see Dwelle. I wanted to see Dwelle, and I took her along. I don't think she knew who he was.
And you were like, I'm about to sing. This bitch about to fall in love.
No, I didn't know that I was going to be singing, but it was just like,
you were like, I'm about to sing. I'm going to sing.
No, what had happened was, he was like maybe 10 or 15 minutes into his set. And he's like, any requests? And I was like, oh, do Hold On. Hold On is my favorite record.
Hold On is a jam.
Yeah. Eric Roberson wrote that. And
shout out to Arrow.
Yeah. Got to get him on.
He would be a great guest.
Yeah, I would love to. He's amazing.
I could see if I could make it happen.
Yeah, man.
I was out at Jazzy Jeff's house with him. I'm just going to name drop everybody I can.
Oh, yeah. You had a thing.
Went to that playlist retreat.
Stay there. Hold On. So, anyway, I'm taking requests. And obviously, I was like, dude, Hold On. And I'm a dude. I'm a fucking dude. And, you know, he's going to pick the chick.
Yeah.
So he sung whatever. And then, like, I added more bass to my voice after he was done with it. I was like, dude, Hold On. And he was like, he's trying to pretend like it was a radio show. He said, where are you calling from? And I was like, I'm right here, buddy. and then he said, hey, you want to help me out? And I was like, what? And I went on stage, and I started singing, and I was halfway. And people started pulling out their disposable cameras, because this was 2005. And sung the song. Halfway through the second verse, I look over to my right. Dwelle's backing me up on trumpet. So like the dude,
holy shit,
the dude that I paid to go see was backing me up on trumpet.
That's
like my favorite. That's my one of my favorite moments of all time.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, he's.
You don't have to put out an album now. You could Jay Electronica your whole thing. You know what I'm saying?
I could, yeah, just
you
not.
Could play, you know, my shit, like, it's not on the internet because I was out before the internet. You know what I'm saying?
What the fuck happened to that guy?
He's signed to Roc Nation.
I mean, I got.
I don't. Like,
I had
like,
my.
Literally nothing happened to that guy. Like, he just. Like, he's just. He's just chilling.
He just hooked up with some girl over in Europe, right?
He's just in the States chilling. Like, he's literally just chilling. Like, I don't know what he's doing, and I can't say that, but I do know that, in my humble opinion, this is not a popular opinion, Jay Electronica can only hurt himself by putting out an album.
Because it would demystify him or something?
There's so little. The album has, as a format, it has so little worth.
Nobody like, cares.
Nobody cares. I mean, like, I won't say nobody cares, because the Jay Electronica album would be like, it would turn the heat up. But it has such a short shelf life. Like, an album has like a week to burn. Yeah. And then you got to start picking it apart. And like, I think if anything, Jay Electronica could smartly like figure out a new way to delivery, a new way to deliver music. Like, partnering with technology. Like,
he just came so like I mean
it's on brand, fucking Electronica. Yeah. Just make an app or some shit, you know what I'm saying?
Over the weekend, so I was getting, and I said this on the episode that's up while we're recording, I'm like I just specifically made it. I have a hip-hop mix that I add songs to occasionally, but it's the songs that I listen to get ready for a show while I'm driving. And, like, it just came on, like, Jay Electronica was on, like, the announcement was there. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, that guy is so good. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely working. I don't know.
That's
what
That's like
he's
if
doing.
You never, if you, you can rap, but you don't put anything out.
It happens, man. Like, I honestly really have no idea what he's doing. I just know that he's still signing Roc Nation. He's, like, it could come out any day. It's not going to come out, though.
So talk about your experience. Tell us about that.
The playlist. The
Jazzy Jeff.
So you
worked on that?
What?
You worked on the playlist, the Glenn Lewis thing?
Nah. Oh. That's what the, it's a writer's retreat called the Playlist Retreat.
Okay.
And he's been doing it for, I want to say, this was like the third or fourth one. But on a whim, I emailed, like, I just sent him the album. I hadn't talked to him in like, God knows how long, and I never officially met him, but I know that he's a fan of the music. So I just was like, yo, Jeff, sent it to him and Eric Roberson and somebody else. And Jeff's immediate response was like, what are you doing next week? I was like, what?
Wow.
Like, and it was one of those things where I feel like I don't know if I'm telling too much. I don't know if I'm telling too much information, but you know what I'm saying? Like, when I sent it to him, he's like, what are you doing next week? And I was like, nothing. He was like, cool, you want to come out? I'm like, nigga, what? Yeah, like, hell yeah, I want to come to your house. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
So, like, within two, the retreat happened within 2 to 3 weeks. And it was one of those things where you can't say you're going.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like, even next year or the years following, if we're invited again, it's one of those things where, like, even when you're there, you just don't say, you can't talk about it. It's Fight Club.
Even though you guys had a pic on Instagram?
You could talk about it after.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Like you could talk about it. There's a strict policy, like, when you come in the house, you can take pictures, but you cannot be on social media.
Gotcha.
Like, so, which was difficult for me because we're in the middle of promoting an album. And I was like, I got to get off the internet for a week.
It was a whole week.
Yeah. We're working on videos, and like, and it's a week of just crappy Wi-Fi, not being on your phone, and just being out of touch with people. I just had to email the publicist and our distribution people, like, look.
You and Vaughn?
Yeah. I was like, look, man, we're at Jazzy Jeff's house for the week, and we can't use our phones. And everybody was like, oh, okay, cool, whatever. You had me at Jazzy Jeff.
Right.
But so, like, the experience itself was just that him and his team have curated, like, some high-level musicians, DJs, singers, rappers, and just artists in general, and they bring them together for this writer's retreat, and like do these team building exercises and just like it was like the most life changing, amazing experience I've ever had. Like literally, I walked out of that thing renewed. You know what I'm saying? I walked out of there like feeling like I had a new purpose.
Oh shit!
You know what I'm saying? Like I don't know if you back when Glenn Lewis was putting out that album.
Yeah, that was like maybe winter of last year.
Chasing Goosebumps.
Yes.
Yeah. So Glenn Lewis put that album out, and there was a lot of media surrounding, like a lot of like they made little clips surrounding it, and one of the clips was Jazzy Jeff saying this thing like die empty. There's no reason you should be sitting on this material. You like you're a creator, create and give it to the people, and don't worry about who's going to get it. Just worry about getting it out of you. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
And it was that thing where
that's real shit.
Like sitting like. Like, A, first of all, again, he's fucking Jazzy Jeff.
Of course.
So, like, you know, we hanging out, and the nigga would walk up, and we would just be talking, and I would just look like, let me geek down. This nigga's Jazzy Jeff. You know, like,
yeah.
Or he would walk up and just, like, quote a lyric to me, like, one of my lyrics, and I'm just looking like, nigga, you're Jazzy Jeff. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Did he ever say, calm down, nerd?
Nah, but there was one time where, like, you know, Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince and shit.
Of course.
Like, there was, I think the Brand New Funk, like, we were like, yo, yes. Jeff, rock the beat. I was walking and I was just like, yo, Jeff. He was like, rock the beat. I was like, oh.
So he's cool about it.
He's so cool about it. Yeah. And he understands what he means to people. He understands, but he also understands that what he meant to people has birthed several other people.
Yeah.
So he respects youth and he respects culture. So it's like he learns from us.
Yeah.
Like bringing us to, he even said it himself, like bringing us out to his crib, it does more for him than it does for us to a certain extent. Like, because it gives him energy. It helps him learn. It helps him like just see other people's processes. And like, you know, like you learn from collaboration. So
yeah,
we did like a. We did a bunch of songs. Like it was like 60 of us, I think, 70 of us. We broke off into these teams and made like this incredible music and just, man, like I can't like even fully articulate how important it was for me. Because just, you know, like you as an artist, man, you know, like anything you do, you always find yourself in like the throes of doubt where, you know.
Yeah.
It happens to me daily. On a good day, it might happen for like a couple seconds.
Dude, that shit ain't real if you're not contemplating quitting or my nigga, why the fuck am I doing this? Or
like the other day, I was walking to the store, like just at 3 p.m., I was like, let me go to the store. The whole walk, I'm like, what am I doing with my life right now? What the fuck is wrong with you? Like, what are you doing? Like, literally, like I'm literally just in my mind, like berating myself for just,
yeah,
for whatever it is I'm doing. And then, you know, like you snap out of it.
It's every day for me.
Yeah, like, but it's that thing where it happens, and then it just you snap out and you just go about your business and you do what you feel like you were born to do or whatever you want to do. But
yeah,
yeah, like so, and even like being able to discuss that kind of shit with not only like an icon but somebody who considers you as their peer. You know what I'm saying? Like it's just like, man, this is wild. But he was super hospitable, man. Opened up his whole house. He had, like, it was just an incredible experience. And I also, ever since the retreat, man, I've been, you know, smoking a little weed here and there. I'm back on the THC train. Back on the THC train.
So you're back on drugs.
I'm back on drugs.
Well, talk a little bit about that doubt, because, like, you're in the middle of promoting the best thing that you guys have ever done, but then there's still doubt, like and how you felt like prior to that, because it's like so when did you go on the retreat, when was the what are we talking, like summertime, right? I remember seeing
the post, retreat like, was summertime. August,
yeah,
beginning of August,
okay, in the fall, late summer, early fall.
And
what was it like before, prior to that, like how were you feeling, what kind of space were you in?
I was excited. Like, I mean,
like before the, like you got an album out, but then you still said you feel like.
I was excited. The album, like the album was very well received. It's still being well received. We did our thing with it. We did a lot of like creating content around it and making sure that it got to the right people. So, like, and all,
like me, that's true.
Like you, yeah, yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like you, Jeff, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. But and complete, like, in all honesty, the fact that the album got us to the Playlist Retreat was literally, that was the point of the album at this point, for me anyway. And I mean, like, it's still proving its worth and it's still showing its value in other ways. But I mean, it's just, it's not like one of those things where you get an accolade or you do something cool and then everything is great.
Right.
Like, it just puts a varnish on whatever it is that's going on inside of you anyway. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, my self-doubt shit has nothing to do with anything other than the fact that
you're human, you're an artist.
Right. Yeah. Right. And like my own personal shit. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, your own shortcomings as a person. So if you feel like you're not I'm just speaking in general. If you feel like you're not the best writer, or you feel like you're not the best painter, or if you feel like you're not a good relative, like if you feel like you're a bad brother or like a horrible father or whatever it is you feel like you are, when doubt chooses to needle in on you, that's what it goes for. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where, you know, I still abide by the rule that, you know what I'm saying, like, worrying is looking at the future, anxiety is thinking about the past, and if you're just present, none of that shit really, like, all that exists is the fact that me and you are having a conversation right now. Like, literally nothing else exists, because everything is like, everything in the future it hasn't happened to you yet, and everything in the past has happened. And if you're alive and breathing and okay right now, then none of that shit matters. You know what I'm saying,
dude?
But yeah, when you're sitting there like putting out an album and you got to worry about who's receiving it, how they're receiving it, if they listen to it, did the newsletter go out, what about sales, will it do well in this market, but like that shit is a recipe for high anxiety, panic attacks, for all kinds of shit. And it's you can control it to a certain extent, but there's nothing you can do about it once it's in the world. You know what I'm saying? Like, all you could do is just know that you did your best and try your hardest to make sure that it reaches who it should reach, and go on about your fucking business. Eat a hamburger, fucking watch Seinfeld, go to sleep early, wake up, jog, cry, laugh, have sex, do whatever you're gonna do in your life.
Yeah.
Because you can control what you can control. You can't control anything that's out of your reach. You know what I'm saying?
That's true, man. That's real shit. Yeah.
But yeah, so the album itself, it I'm proud of it. And like, you know, like, the Playlist is an experience. It's one of those things, like, I would say that shit was literally like one of the top three career highlights. Not even top five. Like, I would put it up there.
Wow.
It a lot of shit pales in comparison. Because again, like, it was like, you know, when you go to like an industry event or like an event and there are other artists there and it's just like an open bar at the Ace Hotel or some shit. Everybody there with their crew and shit. Like, you might see an artist you know, or like see somebody you respect, and y'all don't have to talk. It's just like word. Whereas a Playlist, it was like you're in a fishbowl, and everybody's there because they're an expert or specialist in what they do, or because Jeff respects them. So you, by proxy, respect these people. So like,
yeah.
And it was like literally people just will walk up like, what's up? I'm so-and-so. What do you, or if they knew you, like, what's up, man? It's good to see you. Or if they didn't know you, like, yo, man, so what do you do? And introducing themselves. And it was just like this environment where I'd never experienced anything like that.
That's amazing, man. I think that's what I'm kind of starting to feel like being on set, doing like filming stuff, to where it's like you kind of wonder like where you fit in the community.
Yeah.
And it's like I've been doing like, because I've been acting since I was a kid, and it's like I'm now starting to see the fruits of that labor since I was 12. But everything that I've been doing has prepared me for these two lines to say. But on set. But it's like they want you to be there.
Right, and that's the crazy thing is it's not just two lines. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, it's verbally speaking two lines, but like there's so much more that goes into you actually being able to be on that set. You
exactly.
know what I'm saying? It's
yeah.
it's way deeper.
Yeah.
And not to get all like Tony Robbins on your shit. You know what I'm saying? But it's literally just like, it may be two lines, but your presence is speaks volumes. You know what I'm saying? So they ask you to be there. You're there for a reason.
Yeah.
And that's the, I think that imposter syndrome and like feeling like you shouldn't be in a place is one of those things that I still deal with it, and I've dealt with it.
Mm-hmm.
And even like down to DJ at comedy shows, like I'll be there and like, or whatever. And there are people that know me and I'm just like David Cross would be like, "Hey Don, how you doing?" I'm like, "You fucking David Cross. Why do you know me? How do you know me?"
Well, that's how I felt meeting you. Like, cause I came up to you after that show. I was like, "Dude, do my podcast."
Yeah, and I was like, "Okay, what are you? We want my phone number?" You were like, "Nigga, what's wrong with you?"
No, I was just like, "Wow, man," because like that, because I'm such a fan of hip hop and the way that you guys do it. It was just like, it was really cool to have that synthesis in what you guys do and what you continue to do. And I always talk about on the show where when I was a kid, I'd be in these plays, and at the end of the run, it'd only be a weekend. And you're just like, and I'd be in on the Monday that I was getting ready for school. I'd look in the mirror. I'd be washing my face or brushing my teeth. I'm like, "Wow, you fooled him. You fooled him again. Well, what else? What else can you do, motherfucker?" Like it's just like, I just remember one time, like maybe 10 years ago, maybe like 12 years ago now. So what, 06? 11 years ago, doing this show that was like this. Really, I was really excited to do it. Pre 12 Years a Slave, Chiwetel did the role, and I was like, "I want to fucking do this role." And I auditioned for it. I hired a dialect coach, and I was like, "I'm fucking getting this part. I'm getting this fucking part." And then I got the call saying I got it. And I said, "Oh, thanks. I'll be there Monday." And all da da. Hung up the phone. I was like, "Holy shit! Now I got the part. What the fuck am I gonna do now?"
Yeah.
So it's just that whole, like, it never stops, but you do have, I think you're right, you'd have to kind of put stuff into perspective. And
yeah, like when you get those calls to do things that you didn't think you could do, mm-hmm. or do things that you like, you manifested for yourself.
Yeah.
And you're like, "Yeah, this is just gonna happen, it's gonna happen." And when it happens, you're like, "Oh shit,
now I gotta do the work.
Now I gotta do it." Yeah, like, yeah. I'm in the middle of that right now, like literally right now in the middle of it.
How much can you talk about it before?
I'm working on a podcast, a new podcast.
Okay.
I'm working on turning hip hop trivia into a game, into like a podcast.
Okay.
And I've been working with a company on producing it. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
And just taking it from a bar game to a formatted podcast with like, figuring it out and writing it, it's just like that. I can't do this. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
But again, it's not that I can't do it. It's that you just wrestle with it. You know what I'm saying? You wrestle with it, and most of the time, you know, I wrote a song about it one time. But most of the time, when you're asked to do something of that nature, of any nature, like when you're like in the performance arena, people just want your voice, and your voice meaning like not like your, I think I might have said this on your podcast or something, but like people just want it. They just want your take. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And like any way that you, as long as you can format in a way that's palatable for the audience to receive, you're fine. And even down to Marianne, I got in trouble for this. I don't know, but I'll say it anyway. But there was one comedy show where I messed up a music cue really bad, or I messed up something really bad,
mm-hmm.
and I was kicking my ass in the DJ booth. Like I was over there, like really just upset with myself. And at the end of the night, I was just like complaining or griping to Marianne, and she was just like, "Dude, it's just comedy. Like,
yeah,
people laughed. You're fine." And like that, like the pressure to be perfect and be excellent and be top of your field and top of your craft, no matter what it is, if you just think of it in terms of like, it's just a thing that's going to happen. And when it's happened, it's happened. And even if it goes bad, the moments preceding it is like will the moments that happen after it will decide whether how bad it was.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
It's
about how you handle a fall. It's not about actually falling.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, yeah, so like being like with that podcast and with like writing that, just having a show that's more than me, like just like something with a structure to it.
Sure.
It's difficult because I've never done anything like that before. You know what I mean? But it's also that thing where I talked myself into it. I talked myself into the opportunity, and I got the opportunity. So apparently, I can do it because I could. Sometimes we bite off more than we can chew, but I'm sure it's something that I'm capable of doing.
You can do it, man. I think what it is now is just like there was this. Remember when I was in graduate school? I'm getting in my James Lipton voice. When I was in grad school, 2004. I'm not going to talk like this.
I think you should do the whole thing.
I was doing this play called The Good Woman of Sichuan. It was a Bertolt Brecht play. And the director of the show, June Compton, was this really, she loved Asian theater. And she loved the rigidity of it, where it was just like so structured down to the movements, and everything was just so precise and all just so meticulous. And she wanted to do this show in that style. So what she taught us that whole semester, Asian theater, and then we were the culmination of it would be this play. And it was this really big production and everything. But within all those rules and that structure, you could find there was a way to find out how to breathe life into it and to like even not only follow the rules but transcend them in a way. So that's kind of like how that's what you can do with your podcast. You're like, okay we got this and this, but then how can you like breathe life into it and then just like and make it something even better. So
I'm up for the challenge, and it's something that I've been like we already did we did one test episode. Mm-hmm. And we're going in to do another one. I just have to rewrite a bunch of stuff. And after we get out of the pilot, I'll bother you to come be a guest.
Of course, man. Of course.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just one of those things where, you know, you get an opportunity and you start second guessing yourself immediately. But just not for nothing other than just as something new.
Yeah.
Like if it was another DJ gig or like another, let's do a feature on my album, I would kick the illest 16. I would fucking play the best like string of songs in a row to keep the floor moving. But it's one of those things where, you know, in order to evolve and grow, you have to like put new challenges in front of yourself. You know what I'm saying?
Dude, I think that's a great way to end it, man. Don Will, how can people find you?
People can find me. Just go to donwill.me. Like you know, you can get on Twitter, you can get on Instagram. I'm on Twitter as @DonWill. I'm on Instagram as @DonDub. But I'm making a concerted effort to keep my website updated with gigs and songs and stuff. So, you know, just check out my website if you want to see where I'm at spinning or performing, and check out my Twitter if you want to laugh a little bit, and look at Instagram if you want to see the sexiest nigga you've ever seen in your life.
There you go, fellas. All right, take it easy, everybody.